Thank you, thank you. That was Bernard Shaw with his I Like Puppy Dogs. Next up is a indie artist from England, a man called Tom Parry, here to sing us in to today's Tom and Matt Attack. Take it away, Tom.
Tom and Matt Attack.
He's got a guitar.
Tom and Matt Attack.
And he plays three chords on it.
Tom and Matt Attack. Tom and Matt Attack is back. That was a nice way to start.
Yeah.
Pause while I put the guitar back in the corner of the room.
Exactly. But that's where the wonderful intro music will be, so no one will ever know. Oh, God, no, they will. Oh. Yeah, how are you, Tom?
I'm all right, yeah. Can't complain. Nice day, nice afternoon watching a double bill of Bill and Ted, or a double Bill and Ted, as I like to call it.
A double Bill, but not a double Ted.
You joined us in the watching of the Bill and the Ted.
I did indeed. I must admit, in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I did play some computer games on an actual computer.
A laptop, if you will.
Yes, which was on my lap.
Is this because you prefer Excellent Adventure over Bogus Journey?
Yes, without a shadow of a doubt. But I also wanted to play said game.
I'm probably with you on that, but I think Bogus Journey's got some very cool stuff in it.
Yeah, you
know. The good robot usses versus a bad robot usses.
Oh, but like the good robot usses look so terrible.
No,
now.
They
like,
look so cool. Oh, what great constructions they are from Station.
Yeah, Stations. Like, why is there a little furry dude?
Why not?
True, I suppose.
And Death, always entertaining.
Yeah.
I think still those films stand up very well.
Oh, no,
I always enjoy watching them.
But like, there's a certain level of cheese to Bogus Journey that I'm kind of like,
I don't know, it's a funny film though. It doesn't take itself too seriously, does it?
Oh, no,
well, not at all. Not seriously whatsoever. Like playing Twister with Death.
Yeah, it's just those board
games. It's a nice
games.
Moment, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, anyway, moving on. It's a shame there's not. There is a Bill and Ted game, isn't there?
There is. I hear it's
on
terrible,
the NES.
Though, right?
Yeah, I've seen a good old angry video game nerd review that one.
What was he very angry about it by any chance?
Well, you have to search for objects, and to find objects, you have to purposely bump into them. You know, like throw yourself at them.
Okay,
and that's how you find what you need to get
really?
To the level. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, odd game. We've been playing some better games this week, haven't we? What have we got?
We have got...
What have you been busy?
God, Tom, this has been a big week for games.
It has, hasn't it? You even made a flowchart.
I was going to say, those of you who follow us on Twitter and Facebook will have seen the flowchart of the, I believe, like 10 titles that pretty much came out last Friday.
Why
large
do you
selection.
Think?
I don't know. It seems a bit of a weird thing, right? That to just put all of these games in one week in March just seems a bit mental.
Yeah.
I guess if you look at the calendar, I mean, a lot of these games are coming a week after Titanfall, so maybe people were trying
to... Titanfall's out?
Yeah, Titanfall came out last week.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, because we haven't got an Xbox One to play it on, have we?
We also don't know, because it's not out in Denmark yet, where we currently reside.
And we can't play the 360 version, because that's been delayed.
It has until the 11th of April.
Oh dear, well, we'll just have to make do with the PS4 then, won't we?
We will. Fortunately, a wealth of games out on that PS4. Actually, before I start talking about the next week of games, comparatively, let's talk about a game we actually missed out on last week, because it was actually asked of us on Twitter by at least two people.
You mean Senran Kagura Burst?
Senran Kagura Burst, yes.
Senran Kagura Burst. Try saying that fast.
Senran Kagura Burst, Senran Kagura Burst, Senran Kagura Burst. Hooray
all
for linguism.
Long.
Hey. Yeah, it's a game published by a Japanese developer called Tamsoft, who essentially make the Senkagura series, which is a load of high school ninjas scantily dressed beating the crap out of each other. So popular was a game about that. Surprise, surprise, in Japan. They made an anime based on it.
Okay.
Yeah. I bought it because I was sure it's going to just fade into obscurity and become a collector's item.
Because
also kind of curious about the gameplay.
Because of the risque cover.
Yes, a one with a scroll.
You think that might be one that won't appear on shelves of your local Tesco's?
No, I saw it on in our local GameStop here in Denmark about a week ago when it came out.
Yeah.
And haven't seen it since. Been to multiple stores, not on the shelves anywhere here in Denmark at least, so I'm kind of glad.
That's the kind of thing that I feel nowadays might pop up on Xavi's Mega Monday.
Yeah, perhaps. And
for
then
15 quid, like Killer is Dead Special Edition did the other week.
Really? Oof, I bet that pained you. You know, that game you played for all of 3 minutes.
You've only seen me play it a little bit.
Yeah.
I played it more.
You sure?
Yeah, well, you weren't here.
Okay, fair enough. but yeah, what did you think of it, Tom? Because you were actually more fable. You're no, actually that. More inclined to like this game than
I like actually a bit more because of what?
No, because you like fighting games.
Yes, I do like action games. And I thought this was perfectly serviceable as an action slasher. I thought some of the mechanics were quite fun. I enjoyed my brief 5 minutes playing it.
Yeah, I played the first bit at least 3 or 4 times to make a video, then and I kind of decided it wasn't up to our standards, so I kind of took it down because it was a bit. I tried to record it on a GoPro and it looked a bit weird.
I mean, it has got this all risque idea of the girl's clothes coming up if they fight.
Yeah.
And the transformation sequences are very gratuitous. But hey, you know, that sells, sex sells. As long as it's got the gameplay to back it up, I say, which is, it's hard to say yet, but initial thoughts were, yeah, this is enjoyable. It's got a few levels of depth to the combat.
It does.
But, you know, will it amuse you for long once you get past the initial, ooh, boobs?
Yeah, exactly. And see, I've played Atlas's Court of Princess, which was only released here as a download. I'm still trying to snag an American copy of it so I can just have it on the shelf. Which kind of tries to play off the whole same risque vibe, but is a solid game. It's made by Atlas. It's got the whole RPG mechanic that this has got. It's got all the special moves and stuff. But it feels like a nicer game. It doesn't feel like a PS2 game you've ported to a 3DS. It actually tries to make use of the 3D and not for jiggling breasts, but actual combat depth.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just kind of knocks spots off it. So if you are in the mood for some kind of brisque 3DS game, I would say get Court of Princess.
With some not too deep fighting gameplay. It's fine. It's nothing special, but at least you can get some fun out of it.
Yeah, that's true, I suppose. But I just wanted to touch on that briefly at the start, just to get it out of the way. Ah, fling it across the room. Yes, but now on to this week's launches, Thomas. Very exciting stuff. Saw the release of Sony's first flagship first-party game since the release, and infamous Second Son.
The strangely familiar game.
Yeah, well, you know, a Sony staple these days, I guess.
But I'm interested in the fact that they seem to trying to get themselves away from the actual Infamous branding by having the title Infamous very small on the box cover.
Yeah.
And having the emphasis on Second Son. Will this become the new name for the franchise? Or will they call it Third Son next?
I don't think so. I guess Infamous will always be the core brand of it. But I think it's just, you know. Well, then again, I guess if you look at one of the other games we played this week, Metal Gear Solid 5, Ground Zeroes. Ground Zeroes is second to the brand of...
Of course, yeah. And then
Metal Gear.
It feels very much...
But see, this is my thoughts about why they've done this is because they've got rid of Cole, the protagonist from the last games, in an order to attract a new audience, which, believe it or not, Thomas, I am of. I have never played Infamous 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very excited to play Second Son. And
Ghost Rider in a beanie.
Yeah, Ghost Rider in a beanie. As you wonderfully pointed out, and now it's something I can't get out of my head when I run round the amazing
flailing
city.
Your chain.
Is that he looks like he's going to jump a skateboard at any time and just kick into Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
And it does feel like that at points. Like there's a graffiti mini game where you have to spray a Banksy-esque stencil on stuff and... I don't know. Like
for someone who's played the original Infamous a little, it all does seem very familiar. But it seems it's really well made, and something that Sucker Punch seem to do incredibly well is to nail that feeling of movement.
Yes, definitely. I think
a very kinetic game.
I think the first two powers I now have the second, which is the power to control Leon. First, I could control Smoke. And like, it is very fluid.
Yeah,
and
that neon thing's
how
pretty.
You move around and stuff is very cool. I have two concerns with the game. The first being, and it was kind of a good thing at the start, and now it's starting to get in its own way a bit, that when I first started playing the game, when I was running to an objective to get to this place and climbing and stuff, it said, kind of, didn't display anything on screen saying like, oh, press X to jump, blah, blah, blah. It assumed that I'd already played a game because I had invested in a PS4 and let me get on with it. Yeah. Which is nice. There wasn't any long, boring tutorial sequence.
That's refreshing,
of like,
because you expect,
hey,
it
press
now, don't
X
you?
To jump, hold R to run or whatever. Like, just let me figure out the controls for myself. And then I got to the point, I was like, oh, cool. Now I know the basic controls.
But is there anything for maybe people who aren't familiar with how to play a video game for that audience?
Yeah. Well, like, the powers and stuff are all explained, as you'd imagine. Because
but they're just the basic movement.
The basic movement is just kind of left up for you.
Figure it out. I mean, that's great, because that's how games used to be.
Exactly.
And anything more complicated, as you say, they explain, so.
Yeah. But then that kind of, I think, gets in its own way a little bit, in that they kind of expect you at some points, like, there must be a lot easier way. There's these big armored guys with machine guns and stuff. And I just keep, I'll run into them and there'll be like 80 other people around you. And even though you're a superhero and there's 8 million bad guys trying to shoot at you once, you never really feel superpowered, which is a bit of a pain in the ass.
No.
Like, yeah, you can move very fast by pressing circle to kind of dash and regain health and stuff. But you never feel like, yeah, I can take on these 80 people easily. Which is kind of a good thing, kind of a bad thing. Because they're just basic grunts. And when you're trying to deal with like a powerful enemy and you've got like 5 or 6 of these basic soldiers shooting at you, which do take off a good whack of health, like, you're just screwed. Like, you try and take down the bigger enemy and it's just a matter of you having to prioritize in battle and stuff. But it doesn't feel like I should have to do that. Feels like I should have some kind of power, and I'm starting to get there now where I can kind of be either a good guy or a bad guy with my powers and kind of detain people and stuff so I can focus on other things.
Yeah. Well, I kept thinking as you were going around the city, you know, killing all these guys, you were actually killing them, apparently.
No, I
you were
wasn't.
Subduing them. But it seemed very much that way.
Yeah, beating them with a chain. Well, like, the annoying thing is as well,
and he's meant to be some sort of freedom fighter, isn't he?
He is, yeah, and he keeps, well, you can either be a freedom fighter or a total bastard. But there's the mechanic of good guy, bad guy isn't as much in play as I think something like Mass Effect. I think it's more on the Fable level of like good guy, bad guy, because you can either be a good guy by clicking some options in some cutscenes, which I hear don't really impact the story at all. Or you can either, there's like two things in the world you can do. One of them is punch protesters who are protesting against bioterrorists, as you're referred to in this game. What are they called again? What's the name of like the infamous mutant?
I'm not sure.
I can't look at the box. Conduit, is it? No. I can't. Yeah, my box covers in Danish. You're a conduit, and so you can either punch the people protesting it, or you can bust drug deals.
Yeah, you did a lot of drug busting.
Yeah, because there's one of the characters you get introduced to later on is like a freedom fighter against drugs. And I'm just like, that's all well and good, but like, surely in a 16+ game, tell me, don't do drugs, kids, is a thing. I'm just like,
do you feel it's very in your face, don't do drugs message, or was it just a general,
well, they're like,
drugs are bad?
They're the only side missions. You can either like blow up these oppressors, or you can bust drug dealers. It's just like, great. So if I don't bust drug dealers, I'm a bad guy. Like, there's this weird undertone to it a little bit that's kind of pushed in your face.
I think it's a bit preachy.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But my biggest niggle with the game is the save system. Also the climbing mechanic as well, because the climbing mechanic kind of,
it doesn't do what you expect it to do, does
no,
it?
No, especially in the age of something like, where we've had these amazing Assassin's Creed games and stuff. And I mean, even like, in other games like Uncharted and things, you've had the ability to climb stuff. Tomb Raider is another perfect example.
I swear, in the original Infamous, climbing wasn't such a hassle.
No, well, they've kind of just kind of pitted it on the circle button now, so you can kind of dash up buildings with this neon, or you can use vents. So
yeah,
I'm going to climb the building. I'm a bloody superhero. Let me press X and jump and climb up stuff.
Yeah.
It's more fun. You've given me this huge city, which admittedly, like the city of
very impressive.
Seattle looks amazing. And like we were standing on top of the Space Needle in Seattle and looking around at the world, and it was huge.
And it's all rendered, vibrant. And of course, as with PS4 games in general, lighting effects in these games are really nice.
Oh, yeah. They do a lot of cutscenes in the game engine, not rendered cutscenes, but that use like a time montage thing, you know, like a cut of a time montage where it fade into darkness and then to light again sometimes to show us a new day, and they look very impressive. But yeah, the save system in this game is a pain in the ass, because any time you go on one of these side missions, the checkpoint is doing it. So if you don't do it, you go back to the... Like, if you've walked like 10, 15 minutes in the city, even using your powers and stuff to fly around to get to the where this... There's like detainment centers and stuff and radars set up of the enemies that you can destroy. If you get there, like, you can do little side missions along the way, which fortunately still count, because it really pissed me off when I thought that all the little side missions I'd done in between these big ones were erased. But fortunately, it's not the case. So you'll get to a place, and like I said, there'll be overwhelming enemy odds. There'll be like 30, 40 people protecting this RV thing, which gives you more view of the map of where things are. And you can fight your way through all of them and then get killed by one stray bullet, and then you go back to the last checkpoint. So then you have to fight through all of that wave of enemies again to hopefully get to the roof, to hopefully destroy it. Otherwise, you go all the way back to the last checkpoint. Also, the game kind of relies on the fact that you need to, at least initially, save the game by going into start or options, as it is on your pressing the triangle button to go into a save load or new game menu, save the game. Like, after I did that the first time, admittedly, there are autosaves, but the first time I nearly turned it off after 2 hours going, oh, the game's going to have autosave.
But I guess it's similar to like Grand Theft Auto, where you have to go back to your house to properly save.
Yeah, but this is in the menu. Like, if I can save anywhere, why don't you just save automatically after a mission? But that's kind of frustrating. But like, as I've gone on now, I'm starting to get a bit more powered. And I can see, like, oh yeah, great, I can do these. But when they start throwing heavy enemies in again, I'm going to hit this wall again. And then I'm just going to start feeling like I'm wasting my time, which is, in my opinion, is the biggest sin of video games. Like, yes, they're fun, but, like, if you make me feel like I'm wasting my time doing something...
Yeah, if you're not feeling like you're achieving something...
Yeah, then it's all for naught, in my opinion. But we'll see. Like I said, the game is good enough mechanically and visually that it's kept my interest so far. So we'll see how it goes.
But I don't think it's incredibly revolutionary.
No, I think
not
it's a
in
game
gameplay.
That, you know, at the moment seems very impressive, but as the generation goes on, it's just going to be put on the shelf with Heavenly Sword, you know. It's a game that seems to be all technical flair at the moment, and then...
Yeah. And that tried and tested infamous gameplay that it's already proven itself as being enjoyable. But very much of the last generation, I'd say.
Yeah. I think it's kind of stemming this line of what we kind of talked about previously on the podcast and with games like Donkey Kong and stuff. It's kind of where do you tread on the evolution of a franchise compared to fan expectations? And I think this perhaps borders too much on the latter, where it is an infamous game. And as you kind of said when you came in and looked at it, other than graphical flair, some of the facial animation capturing and stuff, and the fact the city's rendered in real time, there's not a lot to it gameplay-wise that couldn't have perhaps been done on the PS3.
And that's it, yeah.
What it looks like. Which is a shame. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good game. I mean, you could do worse than play and purchase Infamous Second Son, but if you're expecting something brand new, that you've never experienced before, you might be slightly disappointed.
I think
it's
so.
It's not the true next-gen darling that I guess a few people were hoping it.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it could get better later on, but, you know, I've been playing it now about 4 hours, I think.
Yeah.
And 27%, according to the thing, but I don't know if that's the story or collecting and doing all the side missions and all the power-ups and stuff, but we'll see. Yeah.
Will it make people buy PS4s?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe well, it did, apparently. Like, the bundle sold off the shelves everywhere, from my understanding. So, we'll see.
That's good.
Yeah. What have you been buying and playing? Because I feel like this is going to be a heavily one-sided podcast as it is.
Let's just continue to talk about PS4 because I actually haven't purchased anything this last week that I can think of.
Have I? Yes. Ninja Gaiden.
But I don't have that yet.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, for the record as well, yes, my copy of Dark Souls 2 Black Armored Edition has arrived by the wonderful on the PS3. I'm going to play it next week from software, etc., etc. I'll let you know how it is. But a game that was released on every console this week, and possibly the best console experience I've had, I dare say. Perhaps not the best game I've played this week, but one that I really want to go back to already is Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes.
Mm.
I like Metal Gear. I'm not the world's biggest Metal Gear fan by any stretch of the imagination, but that truly felt like a next-gen experience.
Even though it is a game that's been released in the current gen as well.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half long, but it just feels like something new and fresh.
There's a progression in the gameplay from previous titles.
I think so, definitely. I mean, obviously you are still Snake. You're the Snake from Metal Gear Solid 2 at the end, your big boss Snake.
Hmm.
Naked Snake, is that his name? I can't quite remember. Anyways, yeah, you're Snake, and you infiltrate a base because two of the kids that were in not Phantom Pain, that's the new one.
Peace Walker,
thank you very much. I knew it started with a P. Two of the kids that were in Peace Walker are being detained there. It carries on from Peace Walker,
and they're members of Snake's army,
aren't they? So Snake's private army. Yeah. And you go in to save them, and essentially it's just a glorified tech demo. It kind of reminded me an awful, awful lot of owning Zone of the Enders and playing that tanker demo of Metal Gear where you play a Snake before Metal Gear 2.
Lots of rain,
lots of holding up guards, lots of tranquilizing. But goddamn, it's fun. Like, I really like it. It's got some new functions. You've kind of got a Walkman where you can listen to tapes and stuff. Mm. It kind of plays off this, like, hey, aren't we being cheeky? It should be a smartphone, but it's set 30 years ago, so we've given them this other tech. And you can call in helicopters and all the HUD and stuff's updated. And of course, because it's 1970s or whatever it is, he hasn't got a codec. Mm. And there's no rations and there's no hiding in the boxes. It's kind of...
What do you do because there's no rations? How do you heal yourself?
Your health regens.
Oh.
Yes.
Is that a new thing for Metal Gear? I don't know.
I believe so. It's not been in any... I don't know if 4 did it.
I think 4, from my memory, of 4 had rations.
I think so, maybe. It's done the thing of 4's done where you can switch it to shooter controls rather than the Metal Gear controls, but I've played so many Metal Gear games, I prefer the Metal Gear crouch and stuff.
Yeah.
So, but damn, Tom, it's a good, fun experience.
There's a certain classiness to Metal Gear games, isn't there? They kind of always feel to me like a cut above the rest in terms of design and visual flair and...
Well, it's Kojima,
sophistication.
There's that. It opens with that song you see in the trailer. Like, the trailer, the extended one, the first one they showed where Snake says, you know, kept you waiting, with Keith Sutherland, which I actually don't mind his voice in Snake, because it's not the same as Solid Snake, so I'm kind of like, yeah, of course he'd have a different voice.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice, really, to see, like, the style and the gravitas that trailer has kind of carries on throughout the game, and the whole "Here's to You" song has been stuck in my head for weeks. I imagine it'll probably top the iTunes chart because it's that catchy. Like, it's kind of
flashes up on screen the artist.
It does like a music video. Yeah. It's kind of weird. I've never seen anything like that in games. It's kind of giving the artist the respect they deserve, you know, which is nice. It's something quirky you'd only see in a Metal Gear game, I guess. Yeah. But it's still got that over-the-top enemy craziness, like the main enemy you run into is called, like, Skullface or something. And, you know, there's some over-the-top dramatics at the end of it that I won't get into.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
Yeah, but, like, it's crazy. And it's such a good game.
To watch in one place.
For you, yes. You were very squeamish at it, but I was like, oh, it's a bit full on. God damn, though. I can't even begin to describe. It's just a feeling about the game.
Yeah, it's a feeling about Metal Gear in general, I think.
This kind of like this crazy silliness combined with the realism you kind of get from Metal Gear games.
Yeah.
It just feels solid, like it as a shooter, as a stealth game. Like when you get seen by anyone, you go, okay, that's because I stepped out here. I shouldn't have done that. I should have stepped around and shot him, kind of thing. It never feels unfair, which is something I always really like about Metal Gear games. Doesn't really blather on in the style that a certain Rising did. There's no mention of memes and all that nonsense. And my quip of the Metal Gear series will be the fact that Hiro Kojima was defending the fact that it didn't have a platinum trophy. He said, well, you know, it is kind of like a download experience. It isn't a full game. To which my argument would be, yes, because the last time Platinum got anywhere near Metal Gear, they fucked it up, so I'm happy with it having a gold trophy.
Oh, you really have an axe to grind over that game,
God,
don't you?
I hate that game. Yeah, honestly, Metal Gear Solid 5, Ground Zeroes, £20-odd if you buy in the PS3 or the Xbox version. I've seen it for 200 krona here in Denmark. Just pick it up. Honestly, like, if you have a PS4 and an Xbox One, all the better. Pay that extra £5 because you will not be disappointed. Just the lighting effects, the feel of everything around you is just amplified.
What would you say
Fox Engine
for people who would argue that it's only an hour and a half worth of gameplay?
Well,
story at least. You know, apparently I hear there's more to it, more to keep you going back.
Yeah, apparently, well, I completed it, I've only got 9%. And there's a lot of challenges and stuff, which I was a bit dubious of. But after playing it, I kind of wanted more. It went my appetite enough that I kind of go,
you
want to
be in that world again.
Maybe I'll jump into this for an hour and a half. And we kind of talked about it afterwards.
Yeah.
And just this idea of, is this the way that games are going to go now?
It's like a movie. A movie's an hour and a half to 2 hours, usually. And it's a great experience. And games are known for being endless, you know, 40 hours plus or whatever, in some cases.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at How Long to Beat this week after looking at Metal Gear, and I saw that Dark Souls 2 was 65 hours, which is something I can't afford to do. Like, I can play a little bit, but I can see how it is and talk about it on the podcast, but like, and I haven't got 65 hours to
invest. Be able
to
have a full experience and a cinematic story-like feel that Metal Gear does have in an hour and a half is great, actually.
It's mental, yeah.
You know, it's a little bit more affordable as well than your average full-priced 65-hour game or whatever. Yeah. I like this idea. I see myself playing a game like that as I'd settle down one evening to watch a film, get a full experience in a much shorter time period.
And I think in the realms that something like Uncharted is generally known for, I guess The Last of Us as well, the very cinematic style of those games lends itself to an audience watching it as well. So it's,
yeah, those kind of games work. I wouldn't like to play an hour and a half Mario game.
No, definitely.
Perhaps.
As someone watching it, you're just going to get bored to tears and you, like, it's the strength of the narrative.
It's the cinematic quality of these type of games. It'll be very interesting to see if this trend continues at all, or if anyone else decides to say, hey, how about they release this cheaper price? Not as long, but it's like a movie.
Yeah, well, like, we kind of talked about the idea of a shorter gameplay experience appealing to us anyway. Like, we're both very big fans of Dead Rising 2, Case Zero.
Yeah, Case Zero, what a fantastic condensed experience of a game. And one I felt quite happy that I could complete. And in fact, to this day, it's the only Xbox 360 game I've totally got every trophy on.
Yeah.
The only one.
That, Braid, and I think Walking Dead Episode 1.
I say trophy, I mean achievement.
Yes. Sorry.
Playing too much PlayStation, it's like...
Oh dear, Thomas. Mm. It's almost as if we haven't got an Xbox One. this idea, though, of like short games and episodic titles, even. We were talking about Telltale just now, Walking Dead. I mean, that won Game of the Year last year on multiple websites. And I think it's because of the strength of the narrative is something that games can't really offer at the moment, I think.
It's so accessible, isn't it, if it's short?
It's interactive storytelling at its best.
Hmm.
I think if you look at things like Telltale's games like The Wolf Among Us now, which I haven't had a chance to play, and their previous titles like Sam Max, Walking Dead, Jurassic Park, Back to the Future. I think there's something to be said for this short, you can pick up and play this in an hour and walk away from it. After touching on Metal Gear 5, I wanted to look at some of the other options available. I knew there was a great game on the Macintosh PC, and now available on Linux as well, called Kentucky Route Zero, which I heard many, many a great thing about. It's developed by a company called Cardboard Games, and it's won a lot of indie awards. And essentially, at its heart, it's an episodic point-and-click adventure with kind of a text-based game thrown in, you know, like just a text adventure on like an old Acorn or an Amstrad or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just great. Like, it's got this weird atmosphere that I've never really experienced in the game. It kind of feels like ghostly and almost as if there's something really ominous, supernatural going on. The aim of the game is you're a guy in a delivery truck and you want to deliver some furniture, and you stop at a gas station to ask for directions to this place, and he tells you, well, you got to go down Route Zero for that, which is this ghost road that doesn't exist, and you got to find it, and he gives you clues, and you solve a few puzzles, and you get access to his computer for his address book, and that gives you hints, and then you travel around a map, and then, you know, choose your own adventure, text adventure style gameplay of like, oh, you read a description of a building, it's like, walk left down the corridor, walk right down the corridor, blah, 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 blah. And then it goes back to the overworld map where you actually walk around and do the point-and-click adventure bits. But it's got a serious focus on narrative. Like, it is a game that is focused around a love of storytelling.
Mm.
Like, it's got gameplay aspects to it, but gameplay doesn't necessarily get in the way. Then I saw, and I heard a lot about, they'd done a free expansion, which is available to everyone if you go to the website of KentuckyRouteZero.com, called The Entertainment.
Hmm.
Now then, what it essentially is you are an actor in a play written by one of the characters of Kentucky Route Zero, and you sit at a table like a drunk, and they refer to you in the play as the drunk in the corner. And you essentially, for an hour, you just sit there, and first person perspective, you watch this narrative unfold. And your only real interaction is you kind of moving to look at the other people in the bar. And there are some things like narrative things where you look up to the ceiling and it tells you the narrative and the scene direction and stuff. And you, there's drinks and stuff on the table you can kind of look at if you get bored with the story going on. But it's very gripping, and it very much feels like a play. In a way,
it's
I can't really
play.
Yeah, but the, you know, the graphics aren't mind-blowing. Like, it isn't an infamous level of like facial recognition captures and all this kind of stuff. It's just pretty much like vectored, simplistic, almost voxel characters sat around talking. Yeah. But like, you kind of don't notice it. Like, you kind of just, you fade into being in the scene so much. It does this amazing job of having such an entertaining narrative and such believable characters that even when they don't look like these amazing 3D, fully featured, motion-captured models you get in current-gen games. And it made me think of characters in the same way that Thomas Was Alone does, in the fact that you can, with strong writing and strong characterization, which is something I arguably don't feel in Infamous. Maybe it's I'm a bit more forgiving about Metal Gear, but I guess Metal Gear's got some silly writing as well. It's just, the narrative is so gripping, the characters are so realised that you get drawn into it anyways. Mm-hmm. And I recommend, I want you to play it as well, Tom, before the next podcast, we can talk about it again. The entertainment is just phenomenal. Honestly,
it's a gameplay experience with no gameplay.
It's a gameplay experience with no gameplay. Just set an hour aside, sit down with a laptop or in front of
so
a PC,
not a game.
Put headphones on. That's the argument, though, isn't it? Because you do things, you interact.
But you say you can only look around.
You can look around, you can also change music and stuff, okay. And you can do other things within the world. But they call it a prelude, I think, is the term they used between Kentucky Route Zero, 2 and 3. But honestly, go download it. It's free on their website, KentuckyRouteZero.com, and it's well worth it.
It sounds like an interesting experience. I'd like to sample that, Matthew.
You should. While looking for other interesting experiences, though, I was going to download Stanley Parable, because I've heard that is also a very interesting Stanley experience Parable. In a condensed thing. Yeah, it was essentially, it was a game that was made off of a Half-Life 2 mod, and then they were given the money to make it. I'm sure we've talked about it before. It's a game where the narrator kind of says what you're doing, and you can either just click the button it asks you to do, or it branches out in many different ways. I've not played it, and any review or anyone talking about it that I've heard doesn't want to tell you what it's about, because it'll give it away. Yeah. But I wanted to buy that off Steam, and I couldn't. I was also looking then at the indie darling of last year that won a lot of awards, called Gone Home, which is a PC game about you arriving home.
Rings a bell.
And first-person narrative. It's not shooting or anything. It's just a first-person perspective, kind of like The Entertainment. But then I saw that Papers, Please, a game by a chap called Lucas Pope, who's ex-Naughty Dog. He worked on Uncharted 1 and 2, but then he left to set up his studio with smaller games. Was on the Steam sale for €4, and will be, if you're listening to this podcast on Sunday or Monday, it'll still be up on the store, so I really recommend you go check it out. Essentially, you're a... Actually, I will read the official description, because you are a guy checking passports on a border control.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a bit more to it than that.
Sounds like work.
It does, and it kind of feels like work, which is why I kind of stopped playing it at some point. But I think it's a very interesting experience.
Not that we work at a...
No, checking passports. It is work. Right. A dystopian document thriller is how it's described.
Ooh.
A communist state of Azatra has ended a six-year war with its neighbouring Colchia, and reclaimed its rightful hail along the border town, Greenstone. Your job as an immigration inspector is to control the flow of people entering the Arizonian city of Greenstone from Colchia. Among the throngs of immigrants and visitors looking for work, hidden smugglers, spies and terrorists, using only the documents provided by the travellers and the Ministry of Admissions, primitive inspection, search and fingerprint systems, you must decide who can enter a stalker and who will be turned away or arrested. So you have their passports, and every time they walk up to the booth, it says "Paper, Please," hence the name. And you look at their passport, and you see discrepancies, like if it's run out before the date and stuff, then you deny it. If they're okay, you approve it. The first day, you can't approve any foreigners. You can only approve citizens of the thing. But then you've got to check their passport, see if it's them in the photograph, or if their gender matches that, and all this kind of stuff. But essentially, what happens is, the game builds and you get more loops to jump through. And every passport you check impacts how much money you get. So the more people you let through the border, you get $5 for everyone. But you also have a family at home who you need to feed. You need to pay your rent daily. And you've got to like turn the heating on. So you've kind of got to judge how fast you can do it based on that. But then you also, of course, have to be very thorough as to who you're letting into the country, because there's consequences for your actions when you let the wrong people through.
Ooh, it does sound a fascinating concept.
It is, and it won a lot of awards. Off the top of my head, it won the BAFTA for Best Simulation Game. It was also up for Best Game. It won Independent Gaming Festival's Excellence in Narrative and Excellence in Design Awards. That's just three. It won a shed ton. It did very, very well. So much so that Lucas Pope was kind of like asked, are you going to do a sequel? And he's like, well, why the fuck would I do that? If I wanted to make sequels, I would have just stayed at Naughty Dog kind of thing. I want to make my own interesting games. I don't want to just keep developing the same game. Yeah. I want to do new things.
Great, that's good news, isn't it?
Yes,
that he's going to do something different next time.
But like, in this game, there are some serious like moral choices where you know that if you let people through, and like people come to you and they're just like, if I return to my homeland, I'm going to be killed. Like,
oh yeah.
Like,
oh my.
Begging your heartstrings. And like, her husband went through first. This woman was telling me she was going to be killed. And like, you're just like, do I let you through? Do I trust you? What's happening? Because like, sometimes you can accidentally let people through and they're like suicide bombers and stuff, and they blow up the security the other side and all this kind of stuff. So you're like, are you being truthful or are you being...
How do you view this game from a top-down perspective?
It's essentially, at the top of the screen, you've got a view of the people in... No. Well, kind of. The top of the screen is a view of all the people lining up. Then you can see, like, behind you and, like, guards and stuff over the borderline. Then there's a screen which takes up like 2/3 of it below that, then that is your room for checking documents and pulling out the rule books. You can check what the rule is today and how they've been updated and pull out memos.
So is that in first
of what they've said? That's just kind of on your right. And then there's a view of the person through the booth, which is kind of in first person. It's very minimalist. It's very 8-bit in its aesthetic. Okay, so it's not 3D.
It's sort of like that. What's the character design like?
They're just very simplistic people. Like, they don't need to be anything more. They just kind of need to be, you know, they're like an 8-bit pixel avatar almost.
Oh, okay.
They're very simplistic, very minimal color tones. All you really need their face for is to look at the picture on the passport to declare if it's them or not. I've had loads of things like that. Like a woman kind of slipped me a bit of paper under her passport saying, like, I'm kind of being brought into this country against my will. This guy's going to take my passport if you let him in and all this kind of stuff. And then the guy gives you his passport, but everything checks out. So it's like, do I risk getting fined to not let this guy in so this woman can be okay? Or some serious moral choices, and it kind of got to the stage where he was so wrapped up in paperwork and so like, do I let this person in or are you a terrorist? Are you going to do harm to people and all this kind of stuff? And you have to start checking people for smuggling then, because if you let too many terrorists through, they kind of install a sensor that you can see. Yeah.
Whoa, it sounds like a lot.
It's a really deep game, like, honestly, and it's definitely worth a look, especially for the £4 it currently is on Steam.
Okay.
But, yeah, I played that, and it's very good. That's all I can really say. Like, it did stress me to the point where I kind of had to sit down and say, okay, I need to stop playing this now.
It's not a relaxing experience.
No, but it's definitely a very interesting exercise in game design, I think. Yeah. What have you been playing then? Because I've talked long enough.
I've been playing the games I'd previously started, for example, Sonic Lost World, which I had a bit of a crack on yesterday morning. And I was able to get to the final, what I think is now the final world of the game. I must say, for me, sometimes it's a struggle. As has been well documented on this podcast, the game is not without its flaws.
No.
But it's also not without its fun moments. It's just finding them, and it's a very up and down experience. You have to get past some quite annoying niggles to get up to the good stuff, and only to have to a short moment of having fun, something else appears that will just bug you. And
it's kind of like prospecting fun, isn't it? There's like a big trickly river of Sonic flowing down, and you're there with your pan, and every now and again you'll find gold.
That's a great way to describe that game, prospecting fun.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a podcast title.
I think so. But like, it's
a real shame, you know, and I'm thinking more... It looks lovely. The visual aesthetic of the game is very nice, and I kind of feel bad for the department who did the visuals, because their gameplay department kind of just let them down.
See, I don't think the gameplay department really let them down. I think my theory of why this game is a bad game,
the gameplay department, I like the way you discuss that,
is because they have so many good ideas.
There are
so many ideas they perceive to be good ideas that they kind of then clash with other ideas. Yeah. I think it's kind of like, this is our all-out attempt. We've got to make a good Sonic game. And they've thrown themselves so wholeheartedly into it that they've kind of become blinded to it. You know, it's that old thing of like, when you're so close to your artwork, you don't see it for what it is anymore.
They were trying to reach a standard of Mario, I think.
Definitely.
It's obvious in the visual aesthetic of the game.
It's obvious in things like, you know, collecting red Sonic tokens and stuff.
But then that's been in there for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
But this one feels more so than any. They're trying to strike a balance between Mario and Sonic.
Yeah.
It's really funny, yeah, because Sonic usually about running from left to the right side of the screen as fast as possible, or in the more recent 3D games, just whizzing through a predefined level.
Yeah.
Whereas you can take different routes in this, in some of the 3D stages, because of this whole spherical thing, move round objects. It just overcomplicates Sonic.
It does, yeah.
And Sonic doesn't need that. I hope next time... Well, it's a different studio, so they'll definitely take a different angle on it in Sonic Boom.
But again, it goes back to like expectations versus evolution, you know? Like, you saying, like, yeah, running from left to right isn't... That's all Sonic needs to be. But then you played Sonic Episode 4... Sonic 4 Episode 1 and 2, and then they don't take it anywhere.
Yeah, like, well, they didn't do enough, interject enough new things in there, and the new things they did kind of spoiled the experience, or slowed it down in places.
Yeah, but like, the control was off on Sonic. If they released a Sonic game, then everyone would have said, well, they just released a Sonic game.
I still think that there's room for the ultimate Sonic game, and I can see it in my head. I can kind of picture it. I think Sonic Generations is very close.
You think?
Yeah, and I think if they took some elements from the advanced Sonic Advance games, which were, again, very close to Ultimate 2D Sonic,
yeah,
great ideas in there and gameplay mechanics. We'll see what comes of it. I think Sonic Boom is going to be more of a traditional 3D action-adventure platformer game from what I've seen so far.
Judging of the article I saw in Kotaku where they kind of, like, the studio doing it kind of laughed off the fact that, like, Sonic Team had, like, told them a no on a lot of stuff.
I heard,
like,
a lot about design of the characters, but yeah, nothing really about gameplay yet.
But, like, if they're that controlling over the characters, like, can you imagine how niggly they're going to be over the gameplay?
I don't know if they are. I think they're more concerned with how the characters Sonic, Knuckles, Tails are portrayed in the game. And I think gameplay-wise...
They haven't been for, like, 5 years in their games, so why start now?
Well, that's debatable.
Sexy bats.
There are some interesting things.
Sexy bats.
Yeah, sexy bats. A few missteps, maybe Silver, the hedgehog, the parrot from Sonic Riders. And
Big
and
the things. Cat.
I wouldn't say that. Oh, I have a soft spot for Big the Cat.
Do you really like those fishing minigames?
I don't like the gameplay, but exactly, the character, I don't mind. So let's see what happens. Sonic Boom might be interesting, might not be. But I'm probably more interested to see where Sonic Team will take things next when they get the reins back again and develop another game.
Okay.
Let's hope it's not Sonic Lost World 2. That's all I'm saying. A much better game, which is consistent throughout, thankfully, is Super Mario 3D World.
You still haven't bloody completed.
I left it on the last world for an awful long time, kind of because I didn't want to finish off the fantastic experience. Because I found I progressed through it rather quickly. You know, there's definitely more than an hour and a half worth of gameplay in there. There's several hours. It's so fun, so well made, inventive up to the end. As I can say, I'm at the end now. I'm at the final boss of the game.
Tom, all good things must come to an end.
And it must come to an end. So I will pick it up probably next weekend and complete it, I think.
I really need to.
As long as Bowser's not too hard, I might get stuck like I did on New Super Mario Bros. 2.
That's true. Yeah. And they never complete it.
Yeah, still on Bowser on that one. But let's see. Great game. It has delighted me up to this point. And I can't wait to see a new Mario game.
Cool.
And give me more Mario.
I want to play it. Like, you haven't played any of Tropical Freeze.
Well, I'm you know, I want to finish off Sonic and Mario first.
Okay, fair enough.
And also, I wouldn't mind finishing Donkey Kong Country Returns before I actually get stuck into
Tropical Freeze,
which I dip back into now and again. I dip back into Donkey Kong Country Returns and Rayman Origins. Quite try and do it regularly.
Yeah,
I love platform games, and I think if I go sit down and play a game just lately, they're the ones that I've been wanting to play more than anything. Other than that, I say platform game. I've been playing an RPG on the DS.
What?
Pokemon.
Oh, right, okay.
I think I mentioned it last week that I'd completed Pokemon Sapphire after very many years of actually getting to the point where I was
Emerald?
Stuck.
Is it?
Sapphire. Oh, I've gone on to Diamond now.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
I'm now playing through Pokemon Diamond, which I looked at the save file. Started in 2010.
Roses.
Apparently, and stopped playing halfway through. I don't know what happened there. I think probably Pokemon Black came out.
Yeah.
And then I lost interest. And then...
Do you know what baffles me? How you love Pokemon so much.
Yeah.
And yet hate JRPGs.
I think that's true for quite a few people, though.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Everyone seems to like Pokemon.
It's just a JRPG. If anything, it's worse because there's no story.
That's
it's just
the
grinding
best thing about
a million
it.
Different Pokemon.
It's about the choices you make in what Pokemon
Actually,
you
this
choose.
This explains why you like Final Fantasy V so much now, I really think about it, because it's all about squad base for you.
Yeah. Well, it's about how you can make the game your own.
I think you would like Bravely Default.
Yeah. Because I don't like to be given it and said, that's how it is. You know, Pokemon is a game you can mold how you want it.
I think you'd like Bravely Default, because Bravely Default's very customizable.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe, but I don't know. Maybe I'll stick,
I haven't
stick
even
with
finished
Pokemon.
It, so you won't.
But I'm progressing all right in that. Six badges now, I think. Five or six. It's good. It's Pokemon. I don't need to say anything more about Pokemon Diamond. It was actually the game that made me think, hang on, I'm fed up of Pokemon initially when it first came out. And I played everything up to that. And then I was playing through, got halfway through. I was actually playing Pearl at that time. And I thought, hang on, this is just the same thing. So I got rid of that. I think I traded it for Mario Kart or something. I've probably told the story before. And then later down the line, picked up Diamond secondhand. And now I'm going to finish it.
Believe it or not, right? I don't know if I talked about this with me, because I was the same as you. I really like Pokemon games, so much so that after completing the ROM of Pokemon Silver, because a fan translation was out long before that cartridge hit America or Europe, I imported it from Japan because I just wanted to be able to play it on the go. I'd played it so many times on the ROM that I was familiar with it enough that I could play the ROM in Japanese and still know what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, how about moves? How did you read moves?
It's fine. Like, honestly...
How do you know what move you were picking?
I just looked them up online and was just like, okay, that's that move, that's that move.
Oh, so you'd learn that.
Yeah. I did it. I got seven badges, I think, and then it came out in
Japanese.
In Japanese.
Seven badges in Japanese.
Seven badges in Japanese, and then it came out in America, and I imported it from there and then did it on that cart then. But I won Diamond, actually. I won it in a contest over just a, you know, like, tell us which your favourite Pokemon to win.
Really?
Yeah, I won a copy of Diamond, like, not long after it came out. And I kind of played it for a while. And then I kind of got the same Pokemon fatigue that you did, and I got to, like, the seventh badge.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't want to play this anymore. And I traded it in, because this was the time where you'd actually get decent trading values for stuff. Got like £30 trade in for it, so I was like, "New game."
Got it for free anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it was all well that ended well. But then I haven't completed Diamond, and then I think I picked up Pokemon Black when I came here because a few of the guys had it here.
Yeah, same here.
And I didn't really play it that much. Like I kind of ground it a few days.
It's interesting with Black as well for me. Same thing. Yeah. I've got so far in it, probably as far as I am now in Diamond, and then stopped playing it.
Yeah, same.
But X and Y retained my interest.
Yeah, X and Y do something nice, though, don't they? They kind of just bring it into being again. They do so many new things, and they mix it up.
It was what Pokemon needed, X and Y.
Agreed. It was a breath of fresh air.
Mm. Yeah. Even though it's still pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
There's little touches.
Yeah, yeah.
That do help it.
Of course.
And evolve it as a game.
Yes. Other than that, two Vita titles. I did...
you've been playing or you've purchased?
Yes, I did purchase Towerfall Ascension as well, but we haven't had a chance to play the update on the PS4 of the Ouya title, which...
Towerfall Tuesday?
Yeah, Towerfall Tuesday will come into force, I think, this week. I'm going to buy another controller and give it a go. But I bought Vlambeer's Love Trousers, the new game.
Are these the guys who made the Ridiculous Fishing?
They are. They also made Super Crate Box.
Your favourite games.
They are my favourite game developer. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, they've never steered me wrong so far. Apparently, one of the guys at Vlambeer has a folder full of, like, 100 demo games that he's made that are, you know, unreleasable, but he just made them because he liked the idea. And he said, like, he's learned more from those 100 demo games than he's learned from anything he's ever been taught.
Maybe he released them on a Game Boy cartridge.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'd love that. Love Trousers. Essentially, the concept of the game is you're a plane that can only fly up. Like, you can kind of fall from left to right, but it's very Defender style in that it scrolls, side scrolls, and loops back on itself. But you're a plane in some kind of, like, pseudo-Germany style army from World War II, and you're flying in a fighter plane, and you just shoot things. Classic arcade style, but there's water below you, so there's boats, and then there's planes that are trying to kill you. And the fun really comes into the fact that, like, as you progress, obviously you get more difficult enemies, but as you gain points, you level up, and then you can customize your plane. this obviously is not that newer function to any game. Like, the fact you can change your propeller, you can change your engine, you can change the body of your plane. But, oh, not the propeller, sorry, the guns. Change the guns, the body, and the engine of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
However, the unique mechanic of this game comes into play where, obviously, it's a shump, so you want to shoot as much as you possibly can. But when you're shooting, you don't regenerate health.
Mm.
But if you're not shooting, you're not hitting things, which isn't increasing your multiplier, which means your points will go down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this very well orchestrated balance of shooting and dodging and diving that just makes for an amazing gameplay experience. Like, my girlfriend, who isn't a gamer by any stretch of the imagination, loves it, and like, I made a vine of her because I've never seen such delight in anyone playing a game. She's just like, oh my god, just getting full into it and getting excited. It just feels fresh. Like, it's such a tried and tested gameplay. You did a very
chicken impression.
Yeah, I did. That was me, not her. No, she was more like, fly, 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 fly. But, oh, god damn it, Tom. Like, kind of monochrome, I guess.
It looks like a Game Boy game, original Game Boy
game. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And it feels like an original Game Boy game, I guess. Obviously, it wouldn't be as smooth on a Game Boy.
Oh, no. You won't be able to see it. It'd be ghost a bit more, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But it's just that arcade experience boiled down into its purest form and then added things in, like, incentive to play, like collectible guns and all this kind of customization option, which is really nice. But there's a beautiful, beautiful thing that I didn't even really notice until a few plays in. Your health bar, that is obviously, like I said, you regenerate when you're not shooting, is a circle that encapsulates the screen, and the closer that circle is to you, the more damage your plane sustains, as if it's gonna crush you and blow you up. And like, it's perfect because you just see it out of the peripheral vision, and it closes in around the plane, and you're like, oh shit, I gotta stop firing.
Yeah, otherwise that's gonna close in and kill me.
Yeah, instantaneous.
Yeah,
like, you're like, oh god, I gotta get out of this dive.
Yeah, great visual way of interpreting the health bar.
Honestly, Tom, we're going to have to record a TMA quickie bit. It's on the PS3 and Vita. Unfortunately, not a PS4 release yet.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's outstanding. It's a really great game.
Okay, maybe that's one to pick up then.
It's been it's 50 krona, or, well, it'd be like £5 in the UK.
£5.71 or 72p.
It's like 56
like
krona, I think. But, honestly, Tom, like, it's a fantastic game. Then I played and completed, believe it or not, great game by the guys at Image and Form called Steam World Dig,
which was released on the 3DS ages ago, much fanfare and to a water saying available to download right after the
podcast. Steam Dig, yeah, Steam World Dig.
Steam World Dig.
It came out. It was also released on Steam in between now and then.
And finally, it's
landed on the PS4 and
PlayStation
Vita
platforms.
And, you know, I'm really kicking myself I didn't play it before. It's really fun. Yeah. It's.
Do you think it'd be good in 3D?
I think it would. I think 3D would add a lot to it if you played it on the 3DS.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to play.
I'd imagine it's probably cheaper on the 3DS as well, so maybe give it a look. But the PS Vita version, which is the one I'm familiar with, unfortunately, I kind of guess this would probably be the same with Luftrausers as well. My save from my Vita hasn't been transferred over to my PS4 copy, so I went to play it on the big screen just now and I couldn't. It was no data, so it was a shame. But
you not manually do that?
Probably can. It's a mining action platformer. Essentially,
what's the goal?
Well, like, your uncle invited you along to his mine to help him out, and then you get there and your uncle's mysteriously disappeared, and then you find his body, like, pretty much straight away in the mine. And you're just kind of trying to figure out why you invited you to the mine, and you want to dig deeper into the mine, obviously, to try and turn a profit and stuff. And as you go down, there's puzzles and nasties and every sort of thing that's in a good platformer as you go down. It's kind of Spelunky light as well, in a way. Like, the platforming kind of feels very solid, like Spelunky does. It's got the whole Super Metroid / Castlevania, hey, there's a big expansive map with lots of secrets for you to find thing going on as well. I I've kind of come to the conclusion I'm not going to say Metroidvania anymore, because unless you know what that's specifically about, which you probably do if you're listening to this podcast, but if you have absolutely no clue about games, that does nothing for you.
It's a big game that's like Metroid or Castlevania.
Yeah, there's a big sprawling map, and there are many secrets to find on it, and you can create your own paths and stuff by digging. The Spelunky mechanic kind of comes in there, and the platforming feels very much like it. Unlike Spelunky, it's not a roguelike, so when you die and you go back up to the surface, you can just go back down. And very nicely, unlike Spelunky, when you die, your bag of loot, of the stuff you've mined, the crystals and stuff, is still there, so you can reclaim it, which is a nice touch, which doesn't add too much difficulty to it. Perhaps, if anything, makes it a bit too easy. But as the maps aren't randomly generated, I guess it kind of has to leave your stuff behind. Because otherwise you wouldn't be able to buy upgrades. Which come in the form of you get a drill, you get a pickaxe, you get some double jump mechanics and stuff. All very standard things for a platforming adventure game. But yeah, just really fun. Not too long either. I think I completed in under 5 hours. There is a speed run challenge for 2.5 hours, which I could have done, but I was building up my inventory and it getting all the upgrades and stuff. But it's a good game.
Sounds good.
I really like it. I think you should check it out. If not for a love of Spelunky, but for a love of platforming, because it does something a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Always great.
Indeed. And I think that's it from us,
From the obvious that we've been playing this week, every day.
What would that be, Tom?
I'm kind of... I had to mention it on the show.
Have we not talked enough about our
Seaman,
good friend
in
Martin?
In short, it's become a bit of a slog now. 8 days in, is it?
9 days.
9 days in, and he's, especially, you'll see on the latest episode, he's being a bit annoying.
I'm not going to lie to you, I'm almost kind of ready to call it quits.
Yeah, you know, he makes you not want to take care of him.
No, I think tomorrow maybe we need to play it and then play it a bit longer after that to see if there's anything after it. Yeah. But on the grand scheme of things at the moment...
We're not getting very far with it, but that might just be the nature of the game at this present moment in the game.
Perhaps. Either that or we're doing it wrong. And if you've played Seaman, please watch the latest video and let us know if we're doing it wrong, because otherwise we're just going to keep doing this and it's going to frustrate me. Yeah, but Seaman, you know.
An endearing concept if he wasn't such a jackass.
Yeah, if he wasn't such a dickhead, it would be great fun. Well, no, it wouldn't, because it's like 10-minute increments. And while we talked about games like Metal Gear, Ground Zeroes being short cinematic experiences, this is short, tedious experiences.
I think there's more of a frustration of getting him to talk to us at the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if he was a little bit more chatty, which might happen.
Yeah.
Then we'll just keep tuning in.
Kind of looks a bit like Alan Carr. Why is he not a chatty man?
If we're not boring you to death with them, if we are, do let us know. But I'm getting a certain perverse pleasure out of it.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that we could be spending our time editing and doing other things like an infamous Second Son, Quick Look, and all this kind of stuff that people would genuinely be interested in.
We have a small amount of time in our busy lifestyles to record a video. At the moment, they're being taken up with Seaman videos.
Well, unfortunately, like a lot of our editing problems will hopefully be solved next week where I will get a new computer because mine's on its last legs. Mm. But like it takes so long to import and then to render the videos that it makes it... We can only do a video a night at the moment, if that. And that's a 10-minute video. Like, when I do the 20-minute ones, it means me staying up pretty late to do them.
If we did give up on Seaman, I'd think about him. I'd think, you know, he's still alive.
I still think we could play it. I just don't think we need to do the videos.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think so.
Maybe we should make, like, a highlight reel. Maybe we should tape our Seaman sessions and then, like, week one, and then just do, like, that. So we break it down and just publish one a week. That's kind of an edited version of what happened in the tank.
Yeah.
Kind of like could be. When you see like the Big Brother recap shows.
Yeah. The Seaman recap.
Perhaps we'll do that. If you'd be interested in that, because I know a lot of people are watching them, please let us know.
It could be interesting to have a record there of the complete Seaman experience.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I'd be, for one, would be intrigued to see all that. And I expect people, you know, who want to know more about the game would like to also
see
that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess so. Yeah, but other than that, I think that's all we've really been playing. I dipped into a little bit of Spelunky for something Sam at Axlum's kind of started a few weeks ago that I hadn't really followed through on. And I guess you should maybe do it too as well, just to keep in the spirit of a hashtag beat TMA, in which we've all been playing Spelunky's Daily Challenge, and I did disastrously today. Got beaten by about 4 of our followers, which was very much fun. Dear, I think you need to redeem us, Tom. You need to get in there. You need to set the record straight.
Yeah.
Other than that, we will be attending in 2 weeks' time. At least I will. I don't know about young Thomas. A tweet up with Danish developers in Spindalina.
What's a tweet up?
It's just getting together and have a few beers.
It's a meet up.
It is pretty much. It's just people from Twitter of like-minded individuals.
So
from
you're
Denmark.
Not all sitting there tweeting each other, not talking.
At least I hope not. but we'll see. We're gonna have a few drinks. We'll do some tweeting, I guess. And the hashtag for that is TWEKANTSBAR. Tweak Ants Bar. And that's on the 4th of April in Spindalina, in Vila, which is a place we frequented many times for art exhibitions and other things of expatiness. But yeah, I'll be there at least. I'll probably drag Tom along. It's only for an hour or so anyways. So if you're in Denmark and you like video games, come along, get involved. So yeah, until next time, you can find us on Twitter at TMAcast, facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack. You can like this podcast and subscribe to it in iTunes. That would be nice. Give us a review. Also find it in Stitcher on our website, TomAndMattAttack.com. Find us on YouTube at TomAndMattAttack. And until next time,
be excellent to each other
and game on.